We live?
We're live. Welcome to Presidio Bitcoin
Town. Get us going.
We're back.
That is how we get started.
That's right.
That's how we get started.
Live.
Took a week
off.
It's been
2 weeks. It feels like I haven't seen you guys in ages.
I know.
How are you doing?
Good.
Cold. It's been cold in San Francisco.
Yeah, we had a cold snap.
Yeah, what's going on with that?
Atmospheric river.
In the office on Monday, I was absolutely freezing.
Yeah. Which, I mean, for anyone who knows, like, this podcast studio is like hot as hell. So this is the fact that DK and Steve, I may have to... Yeah. I ran over, so I may have to put on a jacket. Anyways.
Is this new? You're usually like with a collared shirt and you look kind of fancy.
Yes,
is this Japan?
Trying to increase my style.
Is it Japanese?
It's not.
Okay.
Oh, well, it looks like it could be.
It was purchased in the time frame of Japan.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I went to Japan over Thanksgiving week and had a great time. And
did they have any turkey celebratory things in Japan?
No, but we ate a lot.
What'd you eat?
Like four different styles of Japanese.
What was the best?
It's also good. But,
yeah,
I mean,
Japan.
Yeah. Like the hot pot was really, really good. I mean, we did sushi, but teppanyaki. We also went to a pizza place, which was like phenomenal pizza.
It's probably the best pizza.
In Kyoto. I hadn't been to Kyoto for like 20 years.
Do you guys just do Kyoto or Tokyo too?
Both.
A little bit Tokyo, yeah.
4 days of Tokyo and 4 or 5 days and then 3 or 4 days of Kyoto.
Nice.
But I've been to Tokyo quite a few times, but typically for work. So it was nice to go on a personal vacation. And then Kyoto had been 20 years. So I'd frankly forgotten all about it. Kyoto's amazing.
Yeah.
And also I learned like the time of year to go is exactly when we went.
Why?
Autumn, leaves changing. I have some epic photos and just really,
sweet,
really beautiful.
Yeah.
I also had a request. Max asked me to get green tea.
I thought you forgot.
And I told Max I don't know anything about green tea.
Oh my God.
But
Steve.
Here you go.
Thank
Max.
You. Thank you. Oh.
And I'm.
Oh my God. I'm actually really excited.
I don't know what I'm doing.
Fuck yeah.
But I'm told this is ceremonial grade.
This is good
handpicked
shit.
From Kyoto Prefecture.
Wow.
So for those of you who can't see, it says here Hoki Kiwama Bitcoin Matcha.
What?
The
are you
Bitcoin
serious?
Standard. No. I got you. This is gold, but I'm just thank you, Steve. It's very sweet.
It's high in I did it chat GPT because it's all Japanese, so I can't read it. Even if I could read, I wouldn't know what I'm reading. But chat GPT says it's high in the umami. So 5 out of 5.
And you know umami. That's my prize quality.
So there you go.
Well, thank you. That's,
enjoy.
That's genuinely very sweet. Thank you. Oh, boy, I can't wait. I'm going to have some right after this.
I'm doing some green tea matcha here, just the Kirkland stuff, you know, in honor of you.
All right. In honor of Japan and me.
And
I'm sporting. We have our favorite tea dealer in Japantown who sponsored or served up at the Type 1 Summit. Word on the street is we just came in this morning with 23 bags of that for our Type 1 speaker. So that's a little bit of an alpha drop. If you're a Type 1 speaker, get ready, look forward.
This is Breakaway?
What's Breakaway?
Breakaway matcha or no?
No. Oh, well,
the other guy?
I don't know if Alex wants to chime in, but that may also be included, but that's not confirmed. This is confirmed. So anyways, green tea show.
Well, while I was in Japan, I had to follow along remotely on some really exciting sports during Thanksgiving week.
DK, if you want to tell me about half an hour,
I'm sure DK was able to watch live. Yeah, I had to watch later when I was back in the States. But
he was on Discord discussing with people.
there was a big college basketball tournament in Vegas, the players era where they could earn all this NIL money. And Iowa State like rocked it.
You guys dominated, right?
They're 8-0 now.
Oof.
Even this week, we played some nobody team, but scored 132 points.
Oh, and I saw you and Haley were discussing because Gonzaga at one point was one. And then did you guys beat Gonzaga? Did y'all play or no?
No. Gonzaga's had a really good season, but then they played in the championship at that Vegas tournament and lost to Michigan by like 40 points or something. Michigan's playing ridiculous level.
Oh, and they got that UAB player. What's his name? The dude that was like going off for triple doubles.
Yeah. But
he sucked on the Blazers.
So Iowa State plays at #1 Purdue tomorrow.
Ooh, that's a big game. Well,
biggest test you can have.
And I got to tell you, so from the Memphis side, there's two things happening. On the Tigers side, it's been a rough start to the season. I'm not going to lie. We got a couple players coming in. So for Memphis, it's a tough situation because we're outside of like the power conferences, right? So Penny's got the #1, maybe #2 now. It's him in Alabama, strength of schedule. So like really, really tough schedule, but we just keep losing. And the first couple games, I got to say, Aaron Bradshaw from Ohio State, like that guy, he's bad. Like, man, like I can't believe we paid him.
He's listening.
I like the guy. He sounds like a sweet, like thoughtful human, and he's starting to play better. So there's hope. But man, it is harsh. But we got some other guys that are ballers. Julius Thedford, that dude's like he's like Tony Allen, like the grit, the grind. He's out there 6'3", but getting 10 rebounds a game, just hustle, baby. Anyway, so the point is, we got a couple big games coming up. We played Purdue though, so to give you a little bit of the recon,
and you played them pretty well. Like Texas Tech lost by 30.
Yeah, and we took them to the wire.
Yeah.
Oh, I think we were up with like 10 minutes left or something like that.
So hopefully Iowa State's watching film of that game. And
I got to say though, this is probably a little bit like inappropriate, but whatever. Like we keep it real on PB. I don't get it. I watch Purdue and it's like a bunch of like kind of like balding white dude.
You're saying the players are?
Yeah.
They're like 7 feet though, right?
Well, I mean, there's some tall, but like, I don't get it, man. Anyways, it is what it is. But that leads me to my other point that I want to make. So I've been getting super back into the NBA, partially because I'm sad with the Tigers sitting at like 75 in KenPom. You know, it sucks. But on the NBA side, Memphis also got off to a rough start. You know, Jaws got all his issues always and everything else. But Zach Edey, talking of Purdue, oh my God.
Tall white dude.
Not just a tall white dude. I'm watching that man. First of all, Zach Edey. No. Shaq Edey. This man, 7'5". He's like a refrigerator. And people say he's not athletic. I'm going to come out and say another comment. That was just racist. This man is around the basket with feathery touch, incredible footwork. Yeah, he's half white, half Asian, but like, good Lord. I'm on the Zach Edey train like MVP.
All right. I'm gonna start watching.
It's good. Anyways, what do you think, DK?
All right.
And the last sports comment, and then we can move on to what we normally talk about. Both of our teams lost our football coaches. So yours went to Arkansas. You told me before the show you're happy about that.
Yeah, we don't like him. He's like, he's the kind of guy, he puts up empty wins and then he fumbles always, like in crunch time. Like, we've never won a conference championship with him. Like, thank God Arkansas took him off.
But he like upgrades to the SEC.
Good for, I mean, Arkansas, short their administration. That's a really bad AD, but we'll take it.
And then, Iowa State's football coach, who's delivered a decade of excellence at Iowa State.
He's good.
Kalshi has him at 97% chance of going to Penn State.
Oh, wait, so it's not official.
It's not official. I've been watching Kalshi like minute by minute, and it was like 70% last night, then dropped to 30%. I'm like, it's turning around, and now it's 97%.
So that just means we need a big BTC pump so a new Iowa State booster can get on the phone and make sure he doesn't leave.
Some Iowa farmer offered him beef for life to stay at Iowa State. Unfortunately, Penn State is probably offering like
a lot,
$11 million a year or something.
Yeah. But who wants some?
It buys a lot of
Penn State, and that's cold. Anyways. We'll see. But that actually brings up one topic, which DK, perhaps you'll have some more comments on. And kind of ties into our normal stuff with Bitcoin. It is interesting to me, you know, you point that out, and I've seen more people on Twitter and various venues talking about Kalshi, Polymarket. We've talked about the Bitcoin equivalent, which I forget what it's called, Predix. It does seem like prediction markets, like after the last election, like people have asked for decades, like when prediction markets, why don't they take off? And you can argue gambling, you know, in Vegas kind of was prediction markets. Elections were the only kind of critical mass, but it does seem like prediction markets are having a moment going mainstream. Would you guys agree with that?
Yep. I agree.
Yep.
Because one way I help keep it real, break out of Silicon Valley tech, Bitcoin nerd world, is to be in my Iowa State sports forums, with a bunch of people from Iowa.
Yeah.
And they, you know, most people in those forums still live in Iowa, and they're just not in like Silicon Valley tech circles generally. Yeah. And they're like, everyone's referencing Kalshi as to whether is Matt Campbell coming or going or whatever.
And so has Kalshi won over Polymarket?
I don't think so.
I think it's still...
I looked up, I didn't find the Matt Campbell to Penn State on Polymarket. So it's almost like, I don't know how these markets get developed, but it's like a marketing opportunity if you're the number two player.
Yeah.
Like, develop something that is becoming popular that's not yet on Polymarket.
Yeah. My understanding is Kalshi is the fully regulated one. And so I think they launched with Robinhood, where you can actually bet on it with your Robinhood brokerage account or something?
Just what
I guess you would call it bet. Maybe invest in an outcome. It's not betting, it's investing.
Thank God. The American populace really needed that.
It's just a prediction.
Yeah, it's just a prediction. With some money attached.
What is the difference between investing and gambling? Could you draw a strong line in the sand there?
I mean, at some level, no. But personally, I will say, for me, investing is something that I plan to hold for many years.
Would you ever buy something as an investment that you would plan to never sell?
Absolutely.
Is that the definition of an investment?
I'd have to think about it more to articulate it well, but I do think there's a distinction. With cash flow generating businesses, you know, you're investing in something that's like a productive asset or intended to be a productive asset versus like something that literally is a binary outcome. Also, like maybe getting to your point of like long-term is just like a business investment is intended to be a sustainable investment. Whereas if you're, you know, predicting is Matt Campbell going to be hired, it ends. I mean, it's going to end. I mean, it literally
durations,
you know,
super
short. You know, by a certain date, this has to happen. So that seems very, very different as well. But then if you compare it to like gold and Bitcoin, which are non-productive assets, or we can argue Bitcoin could be with yields and stuff, but I think you need a little bit different flavor of argument there.
Yeah. I would also say, I mean, yes, but it certainly is a gradient. And one thing that I would say is, I know the Bitcoiners absolutely love him, but we're full of narrative violations. So let's go. I let a lot of my investing strategy be influenced maybe 11 or 12 years ago by, of all people, Nassim Taleb, before he became a BSV supporter. And which he lost a lot of credibility at one point. That's, I mean, it just goes to show, never worship your heroes, like, or whatever.
Never meet your heroes.
Yeah, none of that. That said, the book Anti-Fragile, did you guys read that book?
Yeah.
Phenomenal. And it really, I mean, I read it right out of college. It had a big impact on the way I think about everything. And part of like the general strategy that I loved about that was, you know, his whole thing was like 90% like super, super, super safe. And then like 10% highest risk on ever. And you can like adjust the numbers, 80%, 20%, whatever. But the general takeaway for me was everyone that kind of lives in this like mediocre stand world of like trying to chase like, oh, it's medium risk and medium reward usually just gets owned. And so really kind of like embracing life at the tails is something that, and you know, I think about that with like something like startup investing, right? Like something like Bitcoin, for me, at least I put in like the left, like that's your solid rock. Although he would disagree with that. But to me it is. On the other side, I would say investing in things like startups, like I do through the fund, or I know you guys do personally, that to me is like super, super high risk, but like super high upside. And Bitcoin was like that maybe in 2011 or something. But yeah, I think that balance is interesting, like where people find the dial.
Yeah. I wonder the gambling versus investing thing, because it's, you know, I've felt in the past that I had a clear distinction in my mind of like what is gambling and what is investing. And I feel like I can't really articulate a clean line, which kind of, I guess that first was raised to me a few years ago, and now it kind of bothers me. I can't really articulate it.
Why does that bother you?
I guess I felt I had more certainty about what that is, and now it all feels like a mess.
We'll go deeper on it on like a hour, 2 hour bike ride.
Yeah.
And then maybe if we come to conclusions, we'll share it.
Guys, I think DK is entering his phase of postmodern malaise.
Well, what's interesting, David and I almost always, very often we're already on the same page. We view things similarly. And when we don't, when we're not on the same page, we almost always, once we talk it out,
converge. Yeah, I see that.
But like one thing that we've never converged on, and we definitely shouldn't talk about it on the show, or we'll start punching each other or something.
Oh, I'm curious.
It's like the S&P 500, or like, you know, like an index fund, whether that's, or actually it's more generally like stocks. I think I'm more of the, it's, you know, you can actually calculate the value of future discounted cash flows or whatever.
Yeah.
And then from there, there's some like alpha and beta and like ebbs and flows. And
yeah.
Where I think you think it's more just like complete meme based and just whatever people believe. And it's like less grounded on something.
Is this like the market like weighing versus voting machine?
And I think it is it's more, I think it's more grounded than David thinks. And then like it sort of comes back to that grounded point at through cycles.
Like a mean reversion type of thing.
I mean, this probably is just a duration issue, though.
I mean, I think it's just a complex issue. Like what is the money supply? Yeah. What are interest rates? What are the alternatives? What is the popular narrative that causes people to pile into NVIDIA today or out of NVIDIA? Like, it's all memes and vibes, in my opinion. And so I wanted the world to be the way Steve describes it. I'm like, this is the world I want. Like, you can just be smart and analyze the thing and do the data research, just kind of cash flow and figure out what the right answer is and then invest. Yeah. It's just, I just don't see it that way. I think it's just
my hunch purely vibes. Is the more we go fiat, the more you're right. The more we eventually go on a Bitcoin standard, the more you'll be right. Like eventually, I do think it's like we talked about on the show, it's like, it's impossible. All of these questions we have, like I think about this and it's really hard to explain to people. It's kind of like the greatest lie, you know, the devil ever played was convincing you, you know, one word is the other word. And it's like what we call quote unquote free markets and capitalism has nothing to do with free markets or very little. And every year it's less and less because if the money supply is in fact rigged, then it's like, when you take like sort of rational arguments, it's like, well, if I'm doing an experiment, we've talked about Bitcoin as the metric system. And it's like, okay, you know, do I expect my chicken that from baby size to adult size to grow in size? Like if I'm measuring it, like rationally, you'd be like, well, of course, like that would be retarded not to think so. But on the other hand, it's like, well, what if tomorrow the dude with the ruler can come in and just be like, actually, we cut the ruler in half. And you're like, well,
right.
I don't know. It's like your brain on fiat, you know? Anyways.
Yeah,
but we'll explore more offline the gambling versus investment. I think that's an interesting intellectual exercise.
Yeah. And if we don't come back with black guys,
it can throw one of us might ride off a cliff on our bike.
Yeah, oh shit!
Just kidding.
Yeah, oh, we know who it is.
All right, I wanted to cover a few things before Max wants to talk.
Sayonara, Whoopi.
Yeah. All right.
So bring it back, Steve. Bring it back.
Bicky had an announcement this week, which I think is a really cool new service they provide, which improves privacy. Like a month ago, we talked about one privacy enhancement for Bicky. Now we have a second one. This one is not really part of the software or the product. It's how it's delivered.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I can speak from personal experience. You know, when I first got into the space in a serious way in 2017, I bought a Ledger. Mm. You know, I'd done some homework and learned about Trezor and Ledger, and those two seemed like the best products at the time. And decided to buy a Ledger. And I just, you know, I went to the website and filled out the form and just like
gave me your social security number
and just like I don't know, bought something. Like I was not steeped in OPSEC yet, and I just, you know, I delivered it to my house. Well, then a few years later I learned that their database or their third-party database, whatever, it got hacked.
Yeah.
And so my home address was revealed, my email, my phone number. So now I get daily spam and phishing texts and emails. Just I mean, I'm just like completely desensitized to that because I get it so often. And I moved away from that address. So hopefully the people living there have not had any issues. but it's crazy, right? So that really like really bothered me. And so with BitKey, like when it was originally launched, you couldn't buy with Bitcoin. You had to give, you know, give like an address. And sure, someone could set up like a non-home address, but most people are just going to, you know, just do what I did. And sort
was it originally
naively,
only available via like the e-commerce site, like Best Buy or whoever didn't carry
it? Well, then they partnered with Best Buy, but you could only buy it online. So you're still providing personal identifiable information.
Even then, it feels a little weird, like at Best Buy. Like, I mean, even then, do you really trust? Like, how do you know people aren't at Best Buy fucking with this in the background either? Like, I wouldn't be buying at Best Buy.
That's the BitKey product does have some remote attestation to help protect against that. So better than other products. But in any case, what they just announced is they partnered with like FedEx, Walgreens, Kroger's, and some other entity where you can ship it to
that's awesome.
Like a FedEx and go pick it up there. So you can, and also you can pay, I mean, you've been able to pay with Bitcoin from, I think that was launched earlier this year. So now you can go to the BitKey website.
Super cool.
Pay in Bitcoin, and then specify, oh, I want to pick it up at my local FedEx or whatever, and then go pick it up at FedEx.
That's so awesome.
Which is, I think, phenomenal, right? I mean, this is like the no-brainer way to buy a product that's going to hold your private keys.
Right. How do you think about some people who may not necessarily understand the importance of what that means? That enables you to have a hardware wallet in simple UX, which gives you a substantial amount of privacy by not having it linked to any personally identifiable information. But like maybe the skeptic would say, oh, I'm not doing anything wrong. Why does it matter? So how would you explain, like, I'm just thinking of, you know, if I was explaining to my brother or somebody who's not, yep. you know, he like knows about Bitcoin a bit, but is not really into it.
Tell my story. Like I felt violated having my, you know, my email, my phone number and my home address all leaked to criminals who have a list of people they know own ledgers, are likely have cryptocurrency. And now, like I said, I get like daily phishing attacks trying to steal my cryptocurrency. And, you know, there's certainly been some reports of people having their home invaded. Right? I mean, so
we had that 2 weeks ago in San Francisco.
Yeah. Right. Like I on the home invasion, my own opinion, I think that's still like super rare and people shouldn't get super freaked out about that. But it obviously increases the probability of it happening to you if you're leaked in a list associated mm-hmm. with cryptocurrency.
Right.
So I think, yeah, most people like your brother or whatever might not have that level of sensitivity to this issue. But, you know, sharing personal anecdotes and like concrete stories of what could go wrong, I think then makes it, you know, they'd understand why it's important to do that.
Do you think it's important to think about that with respect to KYC coins versus non-KYC coins? And like, is there a piece of that that's kind of like the next step to think about?
I mean, there's different types of, there's all kinds of different attacks that can happen, right? So the KYC stuff has nothing to do with phishing attacks to your phone number, your email address, or home invasions. Those are very, it's orthogonal attacks.
Mm-hmm. But I guess my point is, you could imagine a 6102 government seizure of Bitcoin at some point. It seems
that's
like
another type.
DK is really getting ready here.
It seems like a possibility. Another, it's just,
yeah.
you know.
I'm just saying, yeah, I mean, there's many attacks that, yeah. that can be on Bitcoin. This doesn't solve all of them.
Right.
This mitigates some of them.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that like I'm not aware of any other product has it's a unique feature.
It's mm-hmm. a great feature, by the way. Whoever thought of that, it's a really good one. Do you already have the ability to time lock on BitKey?
I don't think so. I mean,
that would be an amazing feature too, because like my favorite things are River unveiled force field, and increasingly over time, like I love where
so
BitKey
you didn't. I thought you meant consensus level time lock.
It's application level.
Is River's application level? Yeah. I thought it was consensus level. Well, anyways, either consensus level or application level, maybe both. Like, I'd be interested in, like, maybe you could have, like, varying degrees. But increasingly seeing all that in the world, like, honestly, as much as I love the self-custody stuff, and I think I'm glad that BitKey is moving, like, I'm increasingly more in the camp of, like, let people like River with their time locks just like, hey, man, it's time locked in River. Like, I think that's increasingly an attractive proposition for a lot of people. And I would love to see BitKey
move
more in that
direction. It's a nice feature. I've used Coinbase has had this since like 2016 or something.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I mean,
like the Vault. They call it Vault, right?
They call it Vault. It's an application level. It's the same thing as Force Field.
Same thing, yeah.
So they've had it forever. I used it for a period of time. It's definitely, if you're going to store with a third-party custodian, it's definitely a nice security feature.
Right.
But it's certainly not impenetrable.
Right, of course.
I've seen many instances of where, in fact, just recently with Twitter, X, they did some upgrade to their two-factor, and I got locked out. A bunch of users got locked out.
I remember that.
And I was able to get in touch with X through connections, and they're offering over email, like, oh, we'll just like, disable your two-factor if to get in.
Right? What?
So it's application level, right? So all you have to do is trick some support person internally to like turn it off.
Yeah.
So same with any kind of vault or force field, some employee could be tricked. So it's definitely a nice security feature, but definitely not as strong as the consensus level time lock.
Yeah.
And then with a self-custody product like Bitkey, you'd have to do consensus level.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyways, that would be a really nice, I think, distinguishing feature for Bitkey.
Yeah. So anyway, I wanted to be sure to mention Bitkey. Another thing I want to mention is the boss challenge. Do you know what the boss challenge
is? What's the boss challenge?
No. I do, but
I don't know.
I'll let you cue it up because it's good effect.
It's not a sports thing, is it?
What would you guess the boss challenge
is? I'm imagining I'm playing Super Mario Brothers and I'm like the final boss.
Yeah.
You know, the dragon, and you got to kind of like shoot, you know, avoid his fireballs or something.
No, boss here is Bitcoin open source software.
Okay.
So instead of FOSS,
it's
a twist on FOSS. Okay. So it's free open source software developed for Bitcoin. Jonas from Chaincode has coined the term boss.
It's a great name.
And he and Chaincode have created the Boss Challenge. This will be the third year. So I just want to like let people, anyone listening or anyone listening who knows people who want to get into open source Bitcoin development in a serious way, that this is for you. It's like a 3-month program, super intensive. Like I said, it's the third year running. In the first 2 years, like 8, 9, 10 developers in each of those cohorts have gone on they've gotten Spiral grants and many other jobs working in the open source Bitcoin space. So it's a really good program. So if anyone that you know is interested in going from like a Google job or tech job or whatever traditional software development job, and they really want to get into Bitcoin and this is a good path for them.
So this isn't like a beginner 101 thing. This is you're really good at traditional software and now you want to become good.
Yeah, so you need to So you need to be a competent, like skilled software developer. You can be. It's 101 for getting into Bitcoin, but it's an accelerated program. So like you're expected after 1 month of intensive study, then the next 2 months you work on a project on a real open source Bitcoin.
And this
project
is like a full time program.
It's a full time program. So it would need, you know, it's someone who
quit your job
is ready. You're on the beach, or you're ready to quit your job. You're pretty committed to. You're not just dipping your toes in the water, but you're committed to full time.
Salute
to full time and open source Bitcoin software.
Salute.
Yeah,
and is it in person?
I'm not actually sure. Chaincode has definitely done in person stuff before at Chaincode. This might be remote. They might have some in person component, but I think it's mostly remote.
Okay, so this actually is an interesting segue towards a larger topic I wanted to bring up, but maybe we'll start with this since you're already mentioning boss. So I've been thinking over the break a lot more about AI scaling laws, AI software development. I have a lot of thoughts there and I want to get your views on all this. However, one area I want to start is I was discussing with someone a few weeks ago at the AI conference here about Bitcoin development itself. And he kind of raised a concern, and you're the closest to all this, so I'm curious your view, that, to set the stage, AI is getting really good really fast. You know, every couple months you come back and you're like, holy shit, this thing's a lot better. Yeah. There's like vibe coding got really good. And I'm sure we'll talk more about MDK and some stuff I saw yesterday, which blew my mind. But the TLDR is like, if you thought AI was bad 6 months ago or 3 months ago, try it again. It's just going to keep getting better and better and better. So like we're on this like exponential type curve. Now, what I am a little concerned about is you kind of have two camps of people in the world. I see you have the camp of people who get that, and maybe they're super skilled developers and they're just like kind of like the Carpathy, like embrace the vibe coding, like let it fill you and go with it and you correct it. And then you've got, you know, total beginners who are awesome because they're just like, now they can do new things, like not total beginners, but someone like Matt Belez or DK are now like coding crazy applications and stuff. But then you've got this other group, which are like really skilled software developers from the old world. And I would consider these kind of like the, what are the Jewish dudes with the curls? Like the
Hasidic Jews?
Yeah, kind of like the Hasidic, but like there's, the Orthodox.
Okay.
And you know, one concern I have that this person flagged for me is that a lot of Bitcoin core developers are like a lot of the old Bitcoin core mindset. And I get why, because it's like the kind of thing where it's like nuclear submarine code level. You cannot have any bugs. You can't necessarily trust the AIs, but kind of raise the concern that a lot of these guys are very orthodox and like used to doing things like themselves. Now, as I see, you know, Anthropic just a couple of days ago released their coding agents are breaking smart contracts. And of course, it's Ethereum and Solana, so it's kind of like crap. But like, we're going to find a lot more bugs everywhere in the world that humans couldn't find. Yeah. And if you really believe these exponential charts, then it's like, I don't think we're that far away from having AIs that are like far better than Greg Maxwell. And I use Greg Maxwell because I think of him as like the gold or the Bitcoin standard of developers. But the point is, like, he's not AI. What is your view on that? Are you seeing, are there people in the Bitcoin core community that are like embracing it? Is it kind of an orthodox, like, no, we don't believe in this thing because it could have bugs? Like, yeah, what's your view on that?
Yeah, I think a few thoughts. One is that I think there's a little bit more hesitancy from protocol developers and lower level software, partially because of just habits and the reasons you mentioned, but also the AI tools are not yet good enough for that type of software. I've seen it with my own team working on Lightning Development Kit, which is also pretty low level
protocol
software, and I've encouraged them and nudged them to look at these tools, especially because they are improving every,
month.
Continuously. So like check in every 3 months at least.
Yeah.
And the only signs I've, like, Max Fang from Lexi has started to adopt Claude into his daily workflow, and he works on software that's also pretty system level, low level software. So I think that's a good example of someone embracing it and working reasonably well. I don't think it's like transformative. I mean, I think it's the kind of thing, like, say it's like a 20% win kind of thing, like meaningful.
Yeah.
Right.
And he's positioned now to keep getting those gains as AI improves.
That's what I like.
So he's changed his behavior. So like, it's a very good investment. The win so far though, I'd say is like nice, but not game changing.
Sure.
So I like to monitor that, but I don't think the tools are there yet to, write low level software code yet. But there's other applications, right? Obviously the vibe coding stuff, we've talked about that a lot in the show. But testing as well. Code review is another.
Yeah.
And like LND has turned on AI code review for LND.
That's good.
LDK's turned it on a couple times, and the first time it just simply was not valuable.
When you say like turned it on, what does turned it on mean?
It's like a CICD. It's just, no, when you open a pull request, just this bot automatically reviews, AI bot automatically reviews the code and then writes up a review and posts it to GitHub. Mm-hmm. So if that's a bunch of like AI slop and noisy, it's a net negative. And certainly that was the case the first go around. LND's turned it on. So I think that's improving, and it's very plausible that that's going to go from net negative to a net win. So that's code review. Writing tests is another application. Now, another thing to consider is like code being submitted that either a human is presenting, but it's actually done by AI, or is an anonymous account.
It's an AI.
And you don't know. You don't know who the identity is, who it is, but it's AI-generated code. There's a risk because it could, it could have a bunch of like bugs, or it could have backdoors hidden in it, et cetera. Now, that's true for anyone.
True for humans too, right?
That's true for anyone. Even if Greg Maxwell submits something, we have to assume like he could make a mistake.
He got compromised or something.
Yeah, compromised, whatever. So projects, another concern is like projects being inundated with PR requests. You can imagine just like thousands of PRs being generated automatically by AI. And then like, how do you sift through all of them? That's actually being dealt with right now for the BIPs, the Bitcoin Improvement Proposal. There's work being done on a BIP3, I think it is, to improve the an iteration of the process for BIPs.
Yeah.
And there's debate and controversy over should LLMs be allowed to be used for BIPs?
And I hope we don't go like Hasidic, like just get destroyed.
That's dangerous. The concern by not using it is it the the work imposed on the BIP editors to review potentially an insane amount of content that was just AI slop. But obviously there's a contingent saying like, we need to embrace tools that improve. And also, to what degree? Like if I write a BIP and then have an LLM review it and tweak the language, is that prohibited? And I mean, that's a whole debate going on.
Also, there's sort of, I want to at least raise a distinction and see if my understanding is consistent with sort of your experience here. But like, my understanding is in Bitcoin development, the ideas are more of the challenge than the implementation. Like the software writing is not that hard compared to coming up with the right ideas and getting consensus on the ideas.
I agree with that, except changing the code in the Bitcoin core code base, Satoshi's, code base is fraught with danger. I mean, it's C++. It was not super well written by Satoshi, and it's just been like a patchwork ever since then, with a long-term trend of trying to make more maintainable code, better organized code. What was it like 2021 or so, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, there is the inflation bug that several prominent core developers wrote and reviewed it. So I mean, if we were to select the three best people to be looking at it, it would be those three people, and yet an inflation bug was introduced, only to be caught by a BCH developer who
really
responsibly disclosed it. Wow. The code base is still very tricky. So there's no doubt in my mind that more code review, usage of LLMs to do code review and write test cases and do fuzz testing, etc. Like, I mean, Laulu's, prize winning hackathon from Precipitated Bitcoin was a agentic fuzzing league, I think is what he called it. There's no doubt in my mind those types of areas will already can deliver value and will just continue to deliver value.
So that seems to me, as we think about, I know a question we have is like how sort of Presidio Bitcoin is going to embrace AI going to the future and potentially sponsor decentralized AI and stuff. This to me seems like very low hanging fruit, where if there's not already a contingent, like what I would love to see is that there are a contingent of competent, really good Bitcoin developers who are also at least open to the possibility of being AGI built. Laulu is a great example.
Yeah.
And I actually think it's super important. I mean, Laulu has a couple of things going for him. One, he's young. Two, he's here. And I honestly believe it makes a difference whether you're in San Francisco or not. I really do. Like, I talk to people outside of the rest of the world. If they're not sitting there talking to their friends from Anthropic and other parties, like, they don't see how fast this is going. And I'm not saying it has to be, right? Like, I know it's always going to have a skeptical mindset. But my fear is if we end up with only the old heads that don't see this coming, that's like a big risk to me. And so whether that's sponsoring people that are 100% their whole job is like, we're going to try and attack Bitcoin Core in a responsible way with LLMs to whatever testing, like finding exploits. That seems like super high value.
Agreed. So anyone listening that wants to do that or know someone, like Spiral absolutely give grants for that. And I forget if we mentioned this in the show or not, but when I was in Berlin in October, met up with Felix Weiss, who's a longtime developer in the Bitcoin space. And he was eager to show me this demo, and he's never been like eager to show me a demo before. And I'm glad he showed me the demo. I intended to talk about it on the show. I don't think I have yet, but he used Claude for like 3 months to write a Bitcoin implementation from scratch. So not like building on core or something, or he didn't fork the core code. He wrote a Bitcoin implementation from scratch, which could sync, do an IBD, initial block download, which takes maybe like 5-6 hours using core in like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So he used it. He used a different approach.
Pulling blocks from more.
He just used a different. He just used. I mean, there's a little bit of. There are trade offs compared to the way core does it, but it's an interesting approach. I think it's similar to the LibBitcoin approach, which is another long time implementation of Bitcoin. But what I find fascinating about it is like, he had an idea that he wanted to see in action. And instead of like whining and crying that core is corrupt or core's move slow or they don't embrace change,
he just made his own.
He just made his own. He also is not like threatening forks or anything
Right.
He just built his own, used leveraged LLM. Like he's the first to say there's no way he could have done this without Claude. he had to use Claude. So embraced the technology, used Claude, has a working demo and has real metrics and numbers behind it. And I think that, you know, so are people going to like flock to that implementation? No, but what it's a really good communication and persuasive tool. Now he can publish this and share it with people and share it with the core project, share it with others, saying like, hey, I tested this result. Here's what I got. And perhaps Core will add that one day.
Yeah. And I, you know, we have some interesting comments. Vinny here is saying, it's hard for good devs to trust junior devs. Luckily, if we wait another 6 months, they'll be better than us anyway. All vibes, all the time. And I think that if I had like one message in thinking through funding people to do this stuff or like old, you know, people that are used to the old ways, it's like, yes, maybe they're not there today. And like the 20% win is maybe like whatever. Or maybe you don't even like the 20% win. You'd rather do things by hand. But the risk, I think the biggest risk right now is if you ignore it and you miss. And like, to your point, we're about to be flooded with pull requests and information from AIs. The only way to defend against that is with AI. Like, I'm 100% convinced if human, it's going to be like, I don't even know what the example, like bringing sticks to a fight with nuclear weapons if you're not equipped. So I don't know. I'm increasingly concerned about that. I'm glad to hearing Lalu is on top of it makes me like very happy. And I think it's something we can also push more for being here in San Francisco, continuing to build a bridge between the AI community. Bitcoin, but
what was it? Felix was the guy you mentioned.
Yeah.
Do you know if he? Do you know sort of what process he used to do that? Because it would not surprise me if there's like if you tried to not implement it and instead just get an LLM to understand what Bitcoin is without an implementation. I wonder if it could help us think about it in a better way or sort of get. Yeah, you know, I think there's a lot of just you know sort of. Anecdotally transmitted culture pieces of Bitcoin that maybe don't exist in the code base. And if we could create a little bit of like an AI thinking model about what is Bitcoin and what's the purpose and what are the edges on it, then we can take that as an evolving thing and maybe build different implementations out of it. And I wonder if we got a really good version of that, if it could, you know that from AlphaGo, I think it's move 37 or something. Mm. Do you know that one?
Yeah, of course.
I wonder if there's like a move 37 in a Bitcoin implementation.
There will be.
And if we can sort of get an AI to understand what our principles are that we're trying to achieve, sort of independent of the implementation, how, you know, if we could do that. And I wonder if Felix, you know, if he explored any of that.
I don't know.
I mean, Vinny says something similar. He says you can also use it to come up with seemingly impossible new ideas. I think that's exactly what you're saying. It's just like move 37 for everything.
Yeah.
So I don't know any more details about this process. I'll ask him though, and I mean I'll point him to this show that we talked a little bit about his good work, and maybe he'll share. I know he wants he presented this at a conference in the Middle East, like. 1 or 2 months ago, but I think he intends to do a more formal announcement of the project as well, and he should share his process more.
Yeah.
Outside of Bitcoin Core, something else I've been thinking a little bit about is Drew Bansal talked about this idea that I don't think he was thinking with AI, but I think it accelerates his idea that basically you're going to have all internet services re-architected in the next 10, 20 years, whatever, because basically AI is going to get so good at hacking that all these exploits we can't even imagine now are going to get found. And wherever there's like Bitcoin being secured, that's like what it's going to go after. And so I think very quickly, that's like probably where the self-referential AI sadly starts. I wish it were something sort of pro-social, but it's probably just hacking. And, you know, phishing is like the lowest level, but it's going to get better and better and better. And so I think Drew's point was basically it's going to be a part of evolution where the sort of reward function is like, can I get more Bitcoin? Mm-hmm. And in doing that, that's how we're going to harden all of our systems. But in the meantime, that would suck, you know, if you were part of the testing phase of evolution. So I don't know. I think the thing I'm just getting more and more concerned about is like, we have a giant blind spot with how good AI gets the next even 2 to 3 years.
Which is why I'm surprised you push for moving your coins to Force River.
Yeah, I know.
Instead of having it written on like a physical piece of paper.
I was thinking the same thing. Yeah.
Like definitely having something in the physical world is the defense against remote attacks, AI.
I mean, generated offline, right?
This sort of like, Yeah. I mean,
like if it's never connected to the internet, then the AIs presumably can't access it.
Yeah. But then it's like the fucking wrench attack is getting more realistic too. I don't know. Like, look, I think
the risk of remote attack, traditional remote attacks and AI ones is like 10,000x higher probability than wrench attack.
And look, I think we talked about custody on shows before. I think the answer is don't put all your eggs in one basket. We've talked about that. But like increasingly, as much as I hate to say this, like I do like things like River ETFs, Block. And like, yeah, they're not perfect. But like, I don't know, man. Like I trust that Jack understands what's happening with AI and he's not asleep at the wheel. And there's going to be people there that are thinking about how to secure Bitcoin at Block better than me.
He uses BitKey. but I mean,
you get my point.
But what I think one thing we all agree on, and when we did the episode in January where we dedicated the whole episode to it, I think we all agreed on one thing, which is custody diversification makes tremendous sense.
Yeah.
Because the types of threats and loss of coin risk with self-custody versus a third-party custodian, they're very orthogonal and they're all legitimate risks. So put the 50-50 or whatever split you want to do makes a lot of sense.
And you can, if you believe that like ETFs are not subject to rent attacks, which I believe they're mostly not.
Yeah.
I've explained my thinking there. And I think we have agreement on that. If you believe that ETFs are not subject to rent attacks, you can get self-custody Bitcoin and multi-sig that is subject to no rent attacks in the same sense that ETFs are not.
And maybe, you know, I could see all of this being a big boon for companies like Unchained. Because Unchained, you know, has built a good business, but it hasn't like skyrocketed. But maybe this whole AI thing is what causes that to happen. I do think just in general, and like, I do think, you know, I always try and update my thinking like, okay, like we all believe in Bitcoin, but like things change. And, you know, as I see the market movement, we had a show in the market, and like who knows what happens short term, but like we talked about quantum risk a lot. There's stuff there that I'm still not fully comfortable with doing my own education on that. But I do think that like AI hacking risks are like a new category that I have not taken seriously enough yet. And I think that everyone should be thinking more about that.
Yep. Agreed. And didn't Sundar, I thought I saw a headline, did he say 5 years for quantum?
I'm also in the camp. And like, this is, again, this is my left side of the curve. But you know, I'm always concerned because you get, whenever I hear these like kind of old head guys like, no, it'll not, it's like, they're usually wrong. And when you think about the quantum development with AI, I think one thing that everyone is underappreciating, I'm not saying it's definite, but like, right, like probability distribution, certainly not zero, is that AI accelerates the development of so many things, including quantum. Yep. I think that's one of the giant
black holes. All technologies compound on each other, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And most people fail to see that. They're like, well, actually, you know, it's like, if someone says, well, actually,
it's
run.
The worst. Yeah.
Run.
Anyway, I said my piece on quantum last episode, but a segue to one thing I did last night. Block hosted like a dozen merchants or sellers to come to the Block office in the Mission. So Haley and I went to meet with them and orange pill them, get them to enable Bitcoin payments. It's really good. It's really good experience.
Cool.
But interestingly, the segue here is that one of them, I asked, you know, what do you know about Bitcoin or whatever? And the first thing out of her mouth was quantum. And it was just, sole proprietor in Oakland selling like, you know, art she makes or whatever, right? And she doesn't know hardly anything about Bitcoin. So I just found it fascinating that the first thing out of her mouth on like, what is Bitcoin or what about it is quantum? And she didn't say it in like a, she didn't view it as a risk. It's more, I think, as like fascinating, exciting technology was her perspective on it. And she just
said quantum was.
And Bitcoin, or, you know, Bitcoin's exciting technology, quantum's exciting technology. And she probably read an article or read a headline where the two were together, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I just found that fascinating that's like top of mind for like just normal human people. Being.
Yeah.
But not a negative association necessarily, but, anyway, but that event was awesome. We onboarded 6 merchants onto Bitcoin.
And these are merchants who they didn't know about it or hadn't configured it? Or what was sort of selection criteria for getting them together?
Getting them to come to Block had nothing to do with Bitcoin.
Okay.
It was just a square, just a square event. I think we had done some outreach ahead of time to the 12 to identify like, anyone interested in Bitcoin or whatever. But anyway, six of them enabled it. There were a couple merchants that didn't want to. Mm-hmm. So that's actually good learnings too, because like at the end of the day, it's a no-brainer to enable it because there's no cost to doing right. So because you can configure it so that your sales get converted to dollars. So if you don't want to hold Bitcoin, you right. don't want any tax questions or whatever, or risk, like there's no reason to not enable it, right? Yeah. You don't have to display the itty bitty if that's not your jam or whatever, right?
Would that not be their jam?
So, but I was curious why not? And one of them at least, they had reasonable reasons. One, they're like, they're already experimenting with a couple new features from Square and they're just like, slow down. Yeah, or like, I can only handle so many experiments at once or whatever. So that's a completely reasonable answer, right? The other answer was kind of interesting. They said they had like an older clientele and it might turn them off if they accepted Bitcoin. They didn't really realize that they don't have to promote it.
Right.
Or, they don't have to make it, they don't have to market it to every one of their customers. But
it'd be visible on the POS while the consumer is using it or no?
No.
No.
You have to go out of your...
They may have the sticker.
Well, they don't have to do that, right? Yeah. So if you do the sticker, if you do the itty bitty, if you do any kind of like promotions, which is important for creating awareness of it and promoting it, then obviously all your customers would know. You don't have to do that though. But I think the most interesting thing is they just had that perception.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or not just perception, but that was on their mind and a factor for them. Having said that, the six that converted, all six were very enthusiastic about doing so.
Cool.
None of them were savvy on or super knowledgeable about Bitcoin, but they viewed like their perception was like Bitcoin's cool. It's a positive thing. Mm-hmm. It's exciting. And all of them, like Haley and I made sure we purchased something from them in Bitcoin, and they were so excited.
Really?
Also, all of them chose to keep it in Bitcoin.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Nice.
They're all very, they're like, how do I see
all
it?
Of it?
Yeah. 100% nice. Of sales. And they all wanted to know, like, how do I see it? So then we like navigated them to the wallet and we, this Square UI, there's some areas of improvement with Square UI. And there's also many Square UIs. That's one thing I've learned. There's five different apps in the App Store.
Yeah.
And then there's like many different hardware options available. And there's different UIs across all these. Mm-hmm. So Haley and I learned a ton.
That's great.
Shout out to Angela, who's the PM on Square, who worked on this. She showed up too. She wouldn't have showed up. Haley and I would have struck out because we could not solve some of the problems of enabling Bitcoin. I can walk through that if you want. But anyway, I found it very interesting that the merchant wanted to see the Bitcoin in the Bitcoin amount. Like there's one UI in Square that just shows it as a dollar amount and you have to like switch modes or something to see the units of Bitcoin. They wanted to see the Bitcoin. So I thought that was really fascinating. Also, out of the six that enabled, they all love itty bitty. They all got an itty bitty. No, we're seeing many, many like.
Oh my! Who are these people?
No, majority.
Were
they attracted by the 3%? Were they somewhat already Bitcoin?
Well, I'll get to that in a second. But okay. The itty bitty specifically, though.
Wait, are these middle aged people, men, women? Like, what are we talking about?
Let's see.
They're younger than Steve.
Most were. That's the majority of people. Most were like women in their 30s, 40s.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they like the itty bitty. Interesting.
And so, but I definitely my experience with itty bitty the past year or two or whatever is that like women and children generally love it and then guys less so. But or more mixed. But I think with small merchants, I don't think it's really a gender or age thing. The reason I think most people like, first of all, they don't necessarily. They might think it's like quirky or odd, but it's a great conversation starter.
Yeah, that's true.
And they want conversations with their customers, so I think they view it as that. And then also, it's a very light touch way to bring up the the Bitcoin. It's it's not like a guy with a gun,
right?
You know, like a Bitcoiner with a gun.
America.
No, no, I'll never forget. One time we did a road trip, my dad and I, through Texas, and I went to like a Buc-ee's or one of those. You know, the
Bitcoin
Like, it's like a Texas-sized gas store. It's like literally like the size of the Presidio. It's like a gas store.
Yeah.
And you walk in, and they had a Bitcoin ATM, and I was so excited. I was like, "Look, there's a bit." And this was years ago. I was like, "There's a Bitcoin ATM." And the sticker on it, I shit you not, showed Bitcoin with the giant rifle across it saying, come and take it, money. And I was like, man, I know we're in Texas.
Well,
if
it's in Texas, yeah, that'll resonate. That is
a software approach. but yeah, anyway, I found it fascinating. They all loved Itty Bitty. Now, to your question, like what attracted them to this? I think, for one, it's a little bit of a special group because they already have an affinity to Block, the company, and they came to this event. A lot of them operate out of the Oakland, like the Oakland office. The first floor is like retail, and so I think they're like friends of Square,
right?
And so I think they probably more than the average merchant like love to adopt new features, and they're just like more receptive to like everyone who was visiting them yesterday were Block employees because it was in the office, right? You had a badge in and stuff. So I think there's more open than the general, your average merchant. But definitely, even with them, saving fees was huge. Even like one of them, I think they already enabled Bitcoin, but whoever's talking to them didn't sell them on the fee aspect. And then I told them after the fact that you save fees, and then their eyes like lit up. Then you could just tell that they really go, oh, this is why I want to like market this and get my customers to pay me a Bitcoin, because I get rid of the fees.
That's cool. We should do, I know you had talked about the merchant association idea, and maybe Bob would be a good lead on this because now he's very focused, but it'd be cool to do like a merchant community here. And like just have like
basically merchant like community
night, like a few years
like Pink Owl Coffee. Oh,
yeah, like have all these people like
we're way ahead of that.
are we gonna do a night?
Well,
a day?
Well, first of all, we've already launched and talked about like the online community. Right. And we have two communities. One, a Facebook group, which is for merchants.
Yeah.
And then we have the Discord community, which is for Bitcoiners who are going out evangelizing and getting sellers to turn it on. But as far as like an in-person event here, more than just a night, we're going to do like a full blown, like type one level,
really
quality, event next year.
Sweet.
For, Presidio at Presidio Bitcoin
with merchants.
For merchants.
Yeah. We're going to fill up the lawn out here with merchants.
Oh, sick.
That's awesome.
Are you serious?
That's sick.
Yeah. Daniel Lurie, we're going to get him to come.
Wow. Motherfucker. Let's go. Dude, Daniel Lurie, by the way, hats off to that guy. He does a great job. He's always out there hustling. Like if you get him excited about this, which I think he will. I mean, he's at every merchant being like, hey, I love this like Vietnamese coffee. And like, I can just see him being
I think he'll love it. And so, Haley's going to make this happen.
So it's something love like it. An off the grid style.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
That's nice. Awesome.
So wow. Haley is going to make it happen.
Fuck
she's,
yeah.
She's
that's super cool.
Challenged to get, she's excited and she takes it as a challenge to get Daniel Lurie here.
Let's do it.
I think it's totally achievable. And yeah, it'll just be what we attended last night on steroids.
Mm-hmm.
Like we want 50, 100 vendors out here, right? And open it up to the public. But we'll also have an event here at Presidio Bitcoin with, you know, a smaller group of people who can fit inside here to talk about all the issues on the payer side and the merchant side, and not just have it be Square specific, but other point of sale solutions, and yeah, just a dedicated merchant event here at PB.
That's super cool.
Yeah. So it sounds like the merchant story, you guys, I think, correctly identified the 3% is what's going to drive interest and kind of durable usage and conversion for a merchant to want Bitcoin. But it sounded like you said they were kind of excited to get into the UI and see where the Bitcoin is. Do you think they started to understand a little bit about maybe why a non-merchant may care about Bitcoin? Like, are they curious about that? Or it sounds like they may hold it. They may have some beliefs that they've come to or learned about?
The folks I met last night, I think they have just superficial knowledge of Bitcoin. I think, again, their view is just, it's exciting. It's this foreign world to them, exciting technology.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah.
And they were excited. It was an exciting moment for them that they're a Bitcoiner now. Like they own Bitcoin. They could see it in the UI. So I think this is like the
the beginning of their journey.
I think so much of that is just like general early adopters. Like when I got my honey dealer in Bitcoin, he's not a Bitcoiner per se, but he's someone that thinks he's a curious human being. And so I think if someone's like high on curiosity, they're going to be like, exactly. The only guy that's the, you know, just something he wants to try. I will say one point you made, and like, it's probably the case where like, whatever, just focus on the curious early adopters and build from there. But one thing I noticed when I tried to orange pill, my farmer's market, sort of like the curious, you know, guy with glasses that looks like he reads Wired magazine. Of course he was like, oh, great, let's do it. The woman who's a little bit older, I don't think it's just an age thing. Sadly, I kind of got the vibe from her where she kind of associated with like sort of like Trump. And she was just kind of like, oh, I don't like all that. And like, I think in the Bay Area being a traditionally more liberal city or whatever, like I wonder how much of that's going to be an issue. For the young early tech adopter people, it's not at all. But I think it's at least worth thinking through for that woman. Now, fees, saving, she likes saving, but we all know people like to virtue signal here. So be interesting.
Well, and so we have the Discord community for Bitcoiners who are out doing similar things as what we're talking about. Austin, who's Austin Bach, who's one of our regular listeners, he's the local champion in Seattle. That's another thing too. Like Spiral, we initially shipped the itty bitties and a bunch of like one pagers to like five different Bitcoin hubs in the U.S., five different cities. And then, but we got so much inbound saying, oh, I want to be the local champion for my city or whatever, Kansas City and Seattle and Boston. So we opened that up, an application process. And I think we have like 15 different local champions throughout the U.S. now and growing. We're actually now running out of itty bitties and we have to like make more.
Great.
Which is a whole process. Like it takes like 6 months to get these from China. But anyway.
Wasn't there like
we need local manufacturing?
Local manufacturing.
Come on.
We need to bring it back to the US.
It's national security.
But I think so a lot of people are sharing similar stories as like Bob shared and I'm sharing now. You guys have in that Discord. And one of the reports said that like when they were talking to people that they didn't even realize you could use Bitcoin as money, right?
Yeah.
So I think the narrative has been so strong on number go up and ETFs and like, it, you know, digital gold that tons of people don't even realize you can actually use it as money and it's like lightning fast. So I think this push, Square enabling it, now having many different wallets that work well, and then this Bitcoin army that we're trying to enable and is happening in creating real world conversations with people is going to help shift the narrative to like, to us, like, of course it can be used as money because we're using it. But most human beings don't even know that. So I think that's a huge narrative.
Do we have hub leaders in the South yet, like Atlanta?
Yep. That was one of our initial hubs.
Excellent.
Because there's a physical Bitcoin space in Atlanta. Atlanta Bitcoin Lab.
That's awesome to hear. The reason I mentioned that is I was blown away by a study a couple of years ago. I don't know if this is true. I actually think I shared this maybe with Miles and even he was surprised. But like basically it showed that like Black Americans own Bitcoin like at a much higher like clip than you would expect. And I was like, well, duh, that's because they have Cash App.
Yeah.
Like everyone that's from the South, I'm from the South, like Black people use Cash App. And they also are like generally probably going to be skeptical of a government centralized power. So I think some of fighting this like political narrative, it'd be really cool to start seeing basically the South, people that are already on Cash App, hip hop culture, start to embrace Bitcoin more as like, this is like, it's resistance money, it's independence money. Yep. I think that would be really powerful.
I agree. So we're in Atlanta.
Memphis. Let's get to Memphis.
So you can help us find a local champion in Memphis.
I may have an idea.
Your dad?
No.
Okay. Anyway, that'd be
New
good.
New Orleans. New Orleans. We got Michael Levine from Lightning Lab. Let's get the South. Let's get the South going.
Hold on. There's one more thing I wanted to say. What did I want to say about this stuff?
Biddy.
Yeah.
Big Biddy.
Oh, the Haley and I went on another adventure yesterday. Before we went to this, so Fold. I think we talked about this maybe on the show. Like in October, Fold announced a gift card.
Oh, yeah.
A Bitcoin gift card, right?
Yeah.
And Million from Primal, who we know and love and love what he's doing in Primal, he created a Bitcoin gift card like five, six years ago and that was available in Canada, but it never really, I think he hit some roadblocks and ultimately just abandoned that idea. Fold's now doing it. I've always thought this is like absolutely the best way to gift Bitcoin to people.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely.
Because it's super simple. It's a credit card sized gift card. It's a really, like, even what Million created 6 years ago is a brilliant UX for onboarding someone brand new. So it's really slick UX, simple form factor to give someone as a gift. And it's also something they're familiar with.
Yeah.
Gift cards are a thing. They're already familiar with that. And that, like, the only thing you need to know is like downloading an app from the app store and then just following like 1, 2, 3 very simple instructions. But then for years and years, we never had it. Finally, Folds announced it and launched it. So I looked up, there's one store in San Francisco that has it. So Haley and I went to that store.
Sorry. Had it.
Yeah.
Steve bought out the store.
not quite, but we went to this grocery store at 1800 Folsom in San Francisco.
Hmm. It's like Outer Mission or so? Soma? Where is that?
Sounds like Soma.
Yeah, it's like Soma.
Okay.
I don't know.
It's across
the intersection of Soma and Mission.
Oh, good.
But it was a very busy grocery store. We had to stand in line for a long time, but we went and they have gift cards everywhere throughout the store. I mean, it was like, it was crazy how many gift cards they had.
They're always on those end caps, right?
Yeah, so but they had them sprinkled though also at every checkout line. You know, like they have candy bars and stuff. They had gift cards at every single checkout line. So anyway, we looked through the whole store. There's a ton of gift cards and they like one rack or one specific placement had Bitcoin card. There were 10. So we bought 6 of the 10. There's still 4 there for the taking.
They're probably gone by now. But this is great. Like, are there only 10? How do we get like every store to have like...
The lady who checked us out said we were the first people that she had seen buy these. So I don't know how popular they are yet, but I think it's like so great.
But my understanding is these end cap kind of gift card things are heavily controlled. And so you have to do like a distribution partnership.
Yeah, you mentioned
through Blackhawk.
There's almost certainly through Blackhawk.
But it's not like you go to like the shop owner and say, hey, Bitcoin would be great.
Right.
You have to kind of go to Blackhawk and convince them, right?
Which is why I think Million ended up not proceeding.
But if they get a bunch of sales
and they take a huge margin.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm arguing this from the end consumer side, not like, is it a brilliant business or not?
Yeah.
I hope it's a good business for Fold because I want to see this happen. Right. At the end consumer, you could, specify like, I think it was $25 to $500 value. So you tell them at the checkout counter, that's how much value I want per gift card.
Do they cap how many you can buy?
I don't know. I bought 5 $100 ones that I'll give away for holiday gifts.
And those then is you download.
We need to check in on this for the gift baskets. We wanted to put them in gift baskets for the speakers along with the tea.
Oh, I see.
But we need to get 23.
Well, I just want to make sure I understand the UX. So you buy the gift card, you go to the, you know, the checkout, and you say put $25 on this.
Yep.
And then the receiver of the gift card.
No, you tell them.
Really?
The checkout person is the one that
could you just be like, hey man, 10 grand on this, please?
No, well,
it's a five. No, the card itself says like $25 to $500.
But
so
like,
it's a $500 limit.
So let's say you do a $500 limit.
This kind of becomes local Bitcoin.
Then you have to download
we can talk about that, right? But it is a $500. It's not $10,000.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to, go ahead.
So I'm just trying to make sure I understand the UX. So you get, say, $500 is the max you get on the card. Then you give it to somebody or keep it for yourself. You download the Fold app and you punch in a number. I assume it's not like a seed phrase, right? There's just some like code on the card that you scratch off.
I have been busy since buying it. So okay. I haven't, they're still in my backpack.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'll have to report back next week on the UX once you install the app.
Right next to his GAT. So
yeah.
But ultimately this is like a fairly good privacy tool, maybe.
That's what I was saying.
Potentially. I'll have to see if I have to KYC when I try to claim the Bitcoin.
Right.
I might, but even if so, it could be like I could purchase them with cash at a store and then sell it to you. You give me cash back.
Exactly.
So there's obviously like money laundering potential there, but I think that's where you get the $500 limit. Like slows down the velocity, so it's not super attractive. But how many can you buy? I don't know. Like I bought 5 unquestioned. I just paid the credit card though. So imagine if I would have bought all 10, $500, and I brought in $5,000 of cash.
And the lady's just like, another day. I think another day in the mission. Well,
the checkout lady, I don't think would have cared, but if I would literally hand her $5,000 of cash, I think she'd be like, I got to call my manager. Yeah. What do I do with all this cash? Because they don't want to have that much cash sitting in cash registers.
then the manager might be like, oh, sorry, we have a policy or a rule or who knows. Yeah. So, if, I mean, it's going to vary by store, right?
Right.
But I don't know what the limits would be. But we're going to do our best to get these at Presidio Bitcoin for people to purchase them.
I love it. Well, because we want to do these as like $25 like thank you cards to get the speakers like interested in Bitcoin. So wait, is that the only place we can? Is there anywhere else in the Bay Area? Let's talk off.
One in Oakland and one here in San Francisco.
All right.
But yeah, and I'll report back once I've completed the user experience as to how it was. I'm hoping it's as good or better than what Million did, because what he created was an amazing UI.
Maybe it's an opportunity for Million to reignite that, because it's also very interesting for Primal too, right? Like if you want to get someone like going on Primal, mm-hmm. it's like, here's your first $10 or $25.
Yeah. Can you get them in Costco?
That'd be great. Oh yeah, exactly. Next to the gold bar. Right, if you can buy a gold bar, you should be able to buy some Bitcoin, right? Maybe someone should make a scratch off birthday card with the secret key. I've always liked that idea too, like those mm-hmm. little scratch offs like you do with the nickel or whatever.
There's variations of that others have created.
Yeah.
I think it's good for gifting. I would definitely want to like move the Bitcoin off of that.
Diana asking a question. How did you locate the store? Did you just Google it?
No, from the Fold website, okay. They have a search function. You can type in your zip code.
There's any Fold people listening to this, like if we can get it throughout the whole Bay Area, there will be demand.
Well, we have the lead designer is a member of Presidio Bitcoin.
Since when?
Well, I mean, he was at Design Week. And
well, if you're listening,
I think he is or has become Alex. Is he already a member?
Yeah.
Affirmative.
So well, we hope to see more of him here. But yeah, he's the one I reached out to saying, hey, can we get these at Presidio Bitcoin? Right, he's working on it.
Can we get 23 for our speakers?
Yep. We can also ask him that.
Okay.
Awesome. I love it. We had a bunch of things listed around AI and Nostr. Is that stuff covered or did you have?
No, we did not cover
it. Well, I talked about look, the TLDR is I'm starting to get re-AGI pilled. And
re-AGI pilled meaning you sort of had a slump and now you're kind of back believing it, or?
This is a very long, complicated conversation. I think, you know, I don't even know where to begin. Like, I'm starting to see sort of AI bifurcating where on the short end, I'm increasingly bullish. I made this like tweet about this yesterday. I think Chris Pike was like, I think he's generally a very good investor and sees a lot of trends ahead. And he was always kind of very long Apple when everyone else was long everything else. And his TLDR was open source models are going to get so good, you can run at the edge. I think that's happening, right? And it's interesting because you saw, it was, I think, announced that Peter Thiel slashed his position in Tesla and sold all of his NVIDIA for Apple and Microsoft. To me, the Apple move is a move sort of signifying what Bob McElrath also said here in his talk, which is the open source models on device inference is getting really good. On the other token, or the other the other hand, no pun intended there, I do think that the frontier models are going to keep getting better for a long time as well. And like everyone's like, oh, like the overbuild, like there ain't going to be no overbuild. Like if you follow the scaling laws, and I've listened to more conversations with Dario, and I'd say I'm increasingly impressed with Anthropic and like really... I have two sort of anti-portfolio companies. I personally passed on that one because I thought they were too woke and like I was wrong. Man, they're good. They're really, really good. And I think he's like a very talented alchemist. Like he can cook better than anyone else, it seems like. That's why else is Claude dominating coding. Anyways, you listen to him and like what I love about his take is he's very smart, but kind of left side of the curve. He's just like follow the scaling laws. He's like, just trust scaling. And, you know, if you do that and you say, well, we're building the multi-gigawatt clusters for the next runs now, then we're going to build the 10 plus level gigawatt clusters for the runs after that. Like, yeah, it's like maybe the models start tapering off in the S-curve, but we have a ways to go. So anyways, all that to say, I think you're going to see things bifurcate. A lot of stuff is going to be done on device that's like local, easy. And then there's going to be a lot of like cutting edge stuff, like people that are, you know, folding proteins and doing quantum development. That's all going to still be done in the cloud. So I think I'm bullish on both. But
I think we're close enough to like having good enough things to satisfy most consumer demand on device today?
Not yet, but I think we're getting there. I think people are going to be surprised at how quickly that happens. And I think that's kind of Apple's play all along. Mm-hmm. And I think people are wrong to just think Apple's like incompetent.
I think Apple's been savvy to kind of sit it out.
That's what I'm saying.
Because they don't really have anything really to contribute to it besides like ultimately the hardware,
which is important. And they've been developing those chips. Yeah, it's like they haven't been doing nothing. Like their M, you know, chips are like getting better and better.
But they're not like, oh, let's go build a model or something. Like, I don't know. Let everybody else.
Totally. Yeah. And by the way, on the like the other end, the companies that have impressed me the most are Anthropic and Google. I mean, Google is just working right now. Like, have you all tried Gemini 3?
Yep. Nano Banana Pro.
It's so good. Yeah. Like for the first time, I'm really using Gemini as like a research partner, and like it's actually helping me think through. I have some like, I think fundamental, I've got some big things brewing in my head around the, I tried to get this out at the Type 1 Summit and people didn't fully buy it, but the relationship between energy, information, and entropy, I think there's a lot to explore there. Mm-hmm. And also sort of a modern day Das Kapital. I've got a lot of things I'm like, kind of like whatever in my head, but, and like most people I talk to, like don't understand what I'm talking about, but Google does. And so that's very encouraging. So I'm very bullish on the high-end stuff. I think a lot of it's going
to
move different.
So you have a bunch of slop in your head.
I have a lot of
slop.
Need to clarify.
It is, but it's helpful to have like someone like, and I can also see why people are going to have like relationships. People are totally going to marry these things. They're like, wow, I feel seen. Someone like really understands where my ideas are going. And like, it's cool.
I think the AI companion is the new OS.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and you've got a lot of good ideas around that. I'm long Mika.
They don't.
Very long Mika. Send that woman some sats. But anyways, what I wanted to talk about though, I mean, I'm curious y'all's taking all that, like where your head is at with AI. But at the same time, you mentioned on last week's show, I was concerned during our AI event that Cody made the point that basically the base models did not train on Lightning, very much Lightning data and almost no Nostra data. And that kind of like as the next big training runs, the gigawatt and multi-gigawatt clusters use entirely synthetic data, there's going to be feedback loops where the pools of data that were already established, call it 2023 era, that's like the presets for the next several decades.
Was that Cody's point?
That was Cody's point. Okay. And so basically the argument was like, okay, yeah, there's always ways you can add on fine tuning on top where it's like, I want to use things like Cashew, but Cashew didn't even exist really in 2023, where the libraries, I don't even know, maybe it existed, but like there was nothing on the web. And so his point was that like things like the defaults, like JavaScript and Python, even if Rust is better, mm-hmm. are just going to dominate because, you know, the data that we have today is going to create, you know, 10,000x more data with those examples. And that's what the, you know, Grok 4 and Grok 5 and all the new models get trained on. And I thought that's a very compelling point. Now, as a counterbalance to that, Pablo and others in the Nostra community are like, well, it doesn't really matter because we can just like import that data in afterwards effectively and fine tuning other things. And it does seem like, you know, Matt Velez, who's been using Money Dev Kit, which by the way, that is such a smooth experience. I am so long MDK.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like he's getting Nostra and Lightning to work quite easily using Replit specifically. So what do you think? Are you at all concerned that the base, like, does it matter that the base models are not going to have enough Lightning and Nostra and Cashew stuff in there? Can we add it later? Like, what do you think?
I mean, we touched on this before, and I can understand why there'd be some potential for concern, but ultimately it doesn't really bother me because I think, you know, if you have enough good examples of the thing and if it actually is the unique only way to do the thing you want to do,
right,
that will get surfaced and it will get incorporated and maybe small to start and slow to start. But if you have, like, look, if USD stablecoins is good enough, then that's what'll get used.
Right.
I'm not saying it is, but if it is, then that'll just get used. So, like,
Have to find use cases where Bitcoin is the only thing that can do the job.
Or where people want to use it. Like, I think the one that Matt made is it impressionista.fun, mm-hmm. I think?
Excellent.
So it's really
cool. I was super blown away.
So it's basically like you can prompt a thing.
It's like a PG
Bitcoin.
Make a chat.
Yeah. You can Mika Chat is PG as well. I'll have you know it's not a porn site.
PG-13 at best.
And Matt's made more money too.
Yeah, he's substantially more.
Well, that's because DK has a market.
MDK has a really nice dashboard.
It does. Yeah,
I'm happy to market Matt's stuff. I don't really market my stuff.
PG-13.
It's a little edgy, but
you got a KYC to use DK's app.
But I think the point is you put in a prompt of a thing you want to see, and then you pay, is it, what, 500 Bitcoin?
250.
250 Bitcoin, and then you get an impressionist painting of the thing you...
And then you prompted. Pay another 1,000, you get a video.
Another 1,250, yeah. And you get a video of the thing.
So it's all 1,500 using, total for a video.
It's all the modern stuff.
Dude, Matt can make real money on this.
Nano Banana. Oh, yeah, he's cranking.
This is like a business.
Yeah, he's making money on this, yeah. And he could scale it really big, yeah.
And you could do this for anything. Like, I mean, like, I think one thing that people often forget is just like the ease of like, people just want retardedly simple. You don't want to sign up for 15 accounts. Like, what I want is I want 20 beats that I can rap on. Yes, I could go and like revive my Udio or sign up for Sonos or whatever it's called, but like, I don't want to. I just want to like, I don't want 15 accounts. I just want to like log in and get the thing I want and I'll happily pay.
Yeah. So speaking of music, because I know you're a big music guy and I've been dabbling in different AI tools and kind of music context. I wonder sort of, have you thought much about how AI should evolve or will evolve the music production process?
Well, I mean, it's a great question. I haven't spent a lot of time on this. It's like, it's on my list of like things I want to dive deep on. Like I just, man, by the way, also like if AI does like free up people's time, like this idea of like, what are people going to do? It's like, dude, if I could have 15,000 lifetimes to explore all this, I would be thrilled. I have so much I want to do right now. It's insane.
Yeah.
Like, so I, by the way, so
AI, that's what you fire off AIs in parallel.
Well, exactly. That's what I want to get to. It's like this people being concerned, like AIs are going to take our, it's like, dude, we haven't even started the arc of civilization yet, bro. We haven't even started. We got so many simulations to run. But the AI music production, I'm not a producer myself. I would like to learn. It's also on my list of things. I should talk about this with my producers. We're talking about maybe doing a new album next year. It's been a minute since we've been in the studio. We got to get back at that. But I feel like what I personally want is I want to say, here's some, you know, beats that I like or some songs I like. Make me 20 beats like this. Let me pick the one that I want. Make it super easy for me to record onto it. And then let me publish it. Like, I don't really... Now, ideally, you kind of have like a bifurcation where the super easy version of that is like, I don't have to do anything other than what I want to do, which is rap. All I want to do is really rap. I want to choose the beats. I want to be the tastemaker, and then I want to be the rapper, and then I want to publish.
Do you want to write all the lyrics yourself, or do you want to collab on that?
100% want to write all the lyrics myself.
You don't want to collab.
Zero interest in AI doing that.
Okay.
Because that's what I like doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the same way, like, I'm probably
never going to... partner even.
Nah, bro. Like, maybe one day, but like, to me, it's hard to explain this, but for like, this is another reason I'm not worried about stuff like AI, like taking my role. It's like, the AI, like there's one thing I'm really, 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 really good at. The AI will never be better at me at.
Hmm.
And that's just being me. Mm-hmm. And so increasingly, and it's not to say that I can't use the AI to get new inputs as a thought partner. And maybe I will start to do that. Like I'm doing it now for this essay app. But like, I think of Kevin Kelly's advice, which is don't try to be the best at anything. Just be you. Like, just like follow your weird inclination. Be the only. Exactly. So I'm confident the AI is never going to be better at being, because I'm not even the same me that I was yesterday. Like every day I change and I have new ideas and new interests and like, so it's just like, why would I ever worry about someone out-competing me? I'm not even out-competing. Like, I'm you know, constantly changing. So I like writing. And like, that's something that like, I don't want to give up because that's like, that's fun to me. And like, this other idea of like, people talking about AI, it's like, oh, AI is going to take all the jobs. It's like, well, except for the things you want to do. Like, why? But you're not going to, because it's like, you know, I could be the guy in like Zuckerberg's like, you know, strap on, you know, whatever things on my face, like feed me the bugs. Not worth it. I don't mean in the Mika Jackson. Feed me the bugs and like just pump me full of calories. No, because like I like doing, like, are you guys going to AI do bike rides for you? Of course not. Why? Because you like riding your bike. So anyways, I don't know. I just think of some of these arguments are just...
And then AI watch the Iowa State Purdue game tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and give you a report. Like, that's just, it's just so dumb to me. It's like, I don't know, it lacks like so much imagination of like, you do things ultimately because you want to do them. And like, anyways, so what I want to do more of, what I would like is for AI to empower me to do more of what I like, which is writing. And like, just give me beats. Don't make me do like mess with the production. Now, I think you can have another bifurcated area where it's like, if I want the stems and I enjoy messing around with the software and mixing and all that stuff, like my buddy Pavlo, shout out to Pavlov, then great. That can be an option too. Like, you know, it could be either.
Right. I'm interested in like new ways that people might gather to create music together with like an AI in the loop, but people are collaborating with the AI. And like, so you mentioned like the stems, like could you get 20 different stems out there? You pick one of them and then other people would be like, actually, I like number 17. I'm going to grab that one. And then you're like, actually, they're close enough. They came from a common source prompt that we can actually fuse them.
Yeah.
So that the stem that you liked with the stem that the other guy liked. And now you're sort of making these collaborative, like AI did a lot of the like the hard work, the grindy stuff, you know, much like it does in like, you know, like code repo stuff.
Yeah.
But you get to do the creative architectural kind of thinking design space, and then you sort of have it execute a lot of the details that you don't like.
Yeah.
But how do you collaborate on those things?
So it's very interesting you mentioned that. There's a company, I can't remember the name of it, but I saw when I was at V1 a couple of years ago, and I think they've actually raised like a pretty big round from Andreessen since then. So good for those guys. But it was two Mexican dudes living in San Diego, and Jose was one of them. I mean, I doubt they listen to this podcast, but if they do, what's up, guys? They had this whole concept, which I loved. And, you know, it'd be really cool to revisit. And like, maybe there is an opportunity to start up around this as well. Maybe it's theirs. Maybe it's a new one or a community. But basically, it was all about, you know, the STEM as kind of like the building block. And like, you could do a lot of cool stuff with that, where it's like, then you put it out in the world and people can add their own stuff. Basically, you'd have like version control for music.
Yeah.
And you could also do cool stuff where it's like, if I'm an artist and it's like my sort of like Patreon thing, it's like, oh, like you pay me because you want to hear, like you hear the finished song for free, but you want your big fan. Here's like the 25 stems I had along the way, or you give me feedback during the production process.
Yeah. And keep it all like more visible so that people can see the process and participate and fork it.
And in fact, what's his name? The block designer, Rocky, who got super into Nostr, he was doing a lot of this with Stemster. I still love the Stemster concept of Nostr.
Yeah,
you know, maybe it's something we should revisit. Maybe that'd be something we could bring back, maybe with the help of Matt and Nick or something on, I agree with you though. There's a huge opportunity to make music develop, to make everything, frankly, more collaborative.
Yeah. And I've been
more
working
remixable.
On a thing right now. I don't know if I told you I'm a piano player. You know,
I'm aware.
So I built a game to practice like drills that I want to like practice like voicings of chords or something.
Yeah.
So I built a game and I'm like, oh, actually, like this makes me, it makes it more fun, almost like playing a video game to get better at playing piano.
Yeah.
And it sort of like feels to me like that idea, there's something in there that could be available for other people to kind of compete in a game around getting better at a skill you like.
Totally. Right? And I love this idea of like, if AI is used well, like think about like Alexander the Great had the best tutors in the world. Like why can't we all have that for everything we want? Like I've been thinking about this, like the best single use of money that I wish I had done more of, and I should do more of, I don't know why I don't, but it's just like paying for coaches for really things you want to get better.
Yeah.
Like, okay, you really want to get good at basketball? Like, why not just like have someone like teach you how to do it? Like, even if it's a couple of lessons, what, it costs you $200? And like your probably skill arc development goes like vertical from that. But like you could do that with AI for at least anything digital. My guy Alonzo, I think went from zero to like now is playing Beethoven and Mozart with like a piano app like that.
Yeah.
But imagine if you could design it exactly the way you want, playing the songs you want. I want that for guitar. I mean, I started messing around with guitar a little bit. I would love to have, you know, I just want to learn these songs because this is what interests me.
But the thing about like the video game approach to it is
you got the challenge.
You sort of have a challenge that's like hard enough that you sort of have to work to get there. It needs to be just hard enough.
Yeah.
If it's too easy, it's boring. If it's too hard, you get frustrated. So you kind of need to find this middle ground, which video game designers do a really great job at, like finding the way to like make progress in a video game and just enough difficulty, but just enough success. And you could create a really nice feedback loop where an AI is your tutor in like, you know, for piano, you've got a digital environment. You can connect it via MIDI. You can actually create a digital feedback loop where the AI is your coach, watching how you perform, giving you real time feedback, and then sort of challenging you just beyond what you can do to sort of help you improve faster.
I love that. And like, think about how many new, like, you know, savants you're going to unlock in places like Africa that just never had a shot.
Totally.
And I think about like also like the next step of that, it's like humans are still going to have a role to play too. Now I think Kevin Kelly, again, he made this point of one of the most beautiful things about AI is teaching us what we are as humans, right? Because like the more we see what other things can do, it's like, great. Now we know more of like what makes us unique as a species. And, you know, I think about like, the more you say that, I think one of the most interesting opportunities in the world today is just to totally redesign education.
Yeah.
Because you can totally 100%. Have the AIs like doing stuff for you. But also there's going to be a role for humans too. Like I think about how much I like just like having a friend to talk to and stuff. Like I don't want to be on the computer all day and like Zuck's metaverse. Like I want to also like a mix of like, okay, and then I jam with DK and Steve and like, I don't know, I think there's a ton of opportunity. So, but before we do sign off, I want to go back to the point we're making, because Vinny says Claude seems to have no problem reasoning about post-training information. So coming back to that, like, do you know, and like Matt, I don't know if you're listening to this, but like, how difficult is it for Matt to integrate the Lightning and Noster stuff he's doing today in Replit, or to the extent that you've used Replit on the current models? And are you at all concerned that as the models continue to get far better, if they're only trained, if basically if there's like no Bitcoin, there will be Bitcoin data, but no Lightning or Noster data in there, like how concerned are you?
I mean, what else are they using though? Are people taking payments with Stripe?
It'll probably just be Stripe.
If Stripe works, use Stripe.
Right.
Bitcoin is designed for situations where Stripe does not work. Mm-hmm. And if those situations are important, which I believe they are, but like, you know, you could debate whether they are or they're not. But if they are important, then all of the things that require it will use it. And then that'll just make its way into the data set.
And so interestingly, for something like MDK, which Money Development Kit we talked about.
And,
we all
and that's what
in.
Matt did. He yeah. On Replit, he used MDK. It was like very easy. I think, I forget exactly what, I think it was the easiest thing he's ever.
There's like four areas of improvement. It was easy. And then there's like four things that Nick's working on. And
yeah.
Nick's connected now with Cody at Replit.
Yeah.
They're, going to work. Yeah.
I
connected them.
Yeah,
that's my role in life, just connect people.
Well, that's a pretty fucking big connection. Let's go.
But, you know, so they're going to like squash all four of those things, and then it's even easier. So it's already easy. It's going to get even easier.
And the only thing to worry about is if Nick weren't working on this or Lexi wouldn't work on this, if there weren't like people working to make it easy, then it'd be a problem. But the fact that like some models have been trained without it, and maybe the next generation.
But you do understand, Mike. I get what you're
the
saying.
The compounding nature.
It's the compounding that I think people could miss.
But it's like, unless you have it, there's nothing to compound. You need to start somewhere. So I think now we have things like MDK, and we have Matt making things with MDK that are now getting out on the internet.
Yeah.
And
fair.
I think he's most.
We need to do it fast.
There's
going to
be stuff invented in the future that's not in today's models.
Yeah,
that are better for society and
most
life.
Things have not been invented yet.
I hear you guys on that, but yet the one thing I think that I am increasingly cautious on is like the defaults could become very powerful. Like the defaults could shape the nature of what gets invented more quickly than we realize if the compounding nature of synthetic data is like vertical.
I think that pattern's always been true. Maybe it's on steroids now.
That's the
but
issue.
Also the pattern exists that the true value creation is the oddball, the weird thing that comes out of nowhere.
We love the oddballs here.
And so that'll still happen. And then...
And you have to believe that's like the most important use case to solve is the weird oddball thing.
Yeah.
Like if you're trying to like, hey, don't use Stripe, use Bitcoin instead. It's like, okay, you can try to argue that, but it's like an uphill battle versus like, hey, nothing else works. Use Bitcoin. You're like, oh. Great.
Yeah.
My eyes lit up.
I would love to see Matt, Nick, Max from Lexi as well, all you guys. I would love to see more videos just showing us how you did it.
Yeah.
Like, more explain just like I'm five.
Casual demos.
Yes.
Not super polished.
Not polished. Stuff. Like, show me. Like,
also, Nick did a great one.
Well, here's one thing I've observed. No one seems to share their prompts. And that includes you and Matt. And
we still need to
everyone.
GitHub for prompts.
And I don't know. So why do you think that is? Is it like that's your IP and you want to keep it?
I mean,
why isn't it just that to me, the default should be part of the demo, part of like, hey, here's my work is actually showing prompts. Because for others who haven't yet been able to achieve the success that you guys have, they still have, they're like, oh, that's cool, but how do I do it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't consider it IP. I'm just trying to get stuff out there. Matt, I think, has explicitly said to me, everything he does is open source and free for everybody. I think we don't have a coding tool that makes it the default that your prompts get published.
This is an opportunity.
I think if somebody were to say like, I don't know if it's a plug into VS Code or something into Cursor or Cloud Code or something or Goose, but if there were a way to say like, hey, default publish all of my prompts and all of my sessions to this location, I think a lot of people would use that. And maybe there's like different degrees of control you need. Like, hey, like, let me review and approve them, you know, or only do it after the session if I approve the whole session, so that people don't feel too concerned that there's
or even one click, just I press a button and it packages it up and shares it
totally.
Yeah. Or even that can include a video or whatever demonstration.
Yeah.
Like so, part of the like I want to show off my work. I hit a button, show off my work.
Well, I mean,
and it not only creates a video, but also like. Here's a link to all the prompts. Here's the conversation that was had with the AI.
Well,
and I did a few live streams where I just showed everything I did. Yeah. And Matt and I have done those Vibecast things where we're just showing everything. But like, you can't take it from that video format and like copy and paste a prompt.
So, okay.
So you actually need it like in its native text format.
Request for a product. Because I know there was a big push in the early days, Jack put out the big bounty. I don't know if anyone's ever taken this to do GitHub on Nostr. What about if whoever is doing that, instead of thinking about GitHub, we just start from like, okay, the future is Vibes. And what does version control for Vibes look like? Yeah. We need version control.
This is agreed. Yeah.
Like if this is a request for a startup, I want to see someone build GitHub for prompts, ideally on Nostr, but wherever you think it makes sense. And because then you could do some really cool stuff where you could say like, okay, here are all the different forks. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff. One thing Vinny makes a point is there's a lot of noise. So like probably you have an AI kind of like, mm-hmm. you know, like a fuzz testing or whatever. It's just like takes the important parts, extracts
what was the final thing readable. That worked here? And like, let's package that up.
Exactly. And then ideally you kind of have it in a way where you can just like kind of like hover over it and see. And then ideally, then what you could do is you could start then pumping that through different models, right? And this is something I told the Maple AI guys, which we should talk about more, is like with this idea of like, oh, I've got one, my personal AI, which then has like 15 different models it farms out to. It'd be cool if I could say this prompt with Claude generates this, this prompt with Google generates this, and just like have all these different like trees.
I think both are interesting. I also would like to see the whole thing, because even if it's noise, it's like, even if you went down a wrong path, and then finally right path, I learn from that.
Yeah, that's true.
Because like if I'm starting at zero, or if I'm at this level of skill and you're at this level, then I'd best learn how to get to that level if I see the work you did to get there.
So, I mean, I can understand that in the traditional sense, I would 100% agree. I think in this new world we're moving to, you should almost care less about the dead ends. And like, if I did the work to help the machine figure out how to do the thing that I wanted to be done and you want the same thing to be done, the new version is you don't need to learn all the details and dead ends. You just need to tell the machine, you know, do that thing that DK did and now move on. And I'm going to do the thing that only Steve is doing.
Yeah.
So I think actually, if you look at a lot of these like proprietary, like, you know, the Cursors of the world and the Windsurfs of the world, a lot of like the story, and I don't know how much, and actually in the Anthropic as well, a lot of the story is because people are using these interfaces for coding, they have
more data
and a good feedback
loop.
And
they can train better models.
They can compound better models.
Totally.
So if you want to solve like open source AI or open source coding, maybe what you really want to do is get a plugin for like a goose that becomes a repo on Nostr where you can default publish or with a gated approval, publish everything you want to Nostr. Now you've got Nostr is the corpus of all of the prompt sessions of everything that got done and like the output software from it.
I love that. And so for the people out there that are thinking about this stuff, Matt, Nick at MDK, Max at Lexi, the Albi guys, Million, Pablo, that's a really good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it patterns like, you know, what was that sort of like, what would GitHub look like on Nostr? But oftentimes when we do those things, like what does Twitter look like on Nostr? We too much analogy of how the current thing works, but the opportunities come not from doing the analogies well and polished, but it's from finding the things that couldn't be done before.
Isn't this what Pablo was kind of trying to do? We should get on another call with Pablo and have him demo us his thing.
Well, I thought his was more like the Council of Experts kind of advisors idea.
He's floated in and out of a bunch of these, so we should.
I mean, always creative and happy to spend more time with Pablo.
Future episode.
Yeah. The future is rich.
Cool.
Okay.
Great show, guys.
Yeah, great.
Man.
Okay. Wrap it.
Yeah. Thanks. Bye-bye.